Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Gnostic Media's Unspun, number 92. I'm here with Bill Jocelyn again. Welcome back, Bill. Clint was here. He just went to go deal with the dog very quickly, and he'll be right back. And today is, what is this? It's the 9th anniversary show for the Gnostic Media podcast, Gnostic Media show and all. So it's been a long time. What does that make it? There's 266 Gnostic Media shows, 92 Unspun shows, another 66 RBN shows. So that's a couple few. That's what is that? I don't know, 450 some, so such.
Slacking off.
And then there's the other. Remember, Clint, when you and I used to get interviews on other shows before we started figuring everything out? You know, so then there was like the other 400 interviews on other shows. You know, but they
yes,
have
welcome to your infamy.
Yeah, well, you know, you're not
infamous,
and you know, you're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to talk about all of this stuff if you want to get interviews on all of the CIA controlled air quotes alt media. You know, you know, and YouTube has been randomly going through and defunding my most popular videos on YouTube, and I've had to file like manual reviews. So then they unblocked a bunch of them and then immediately went through and blocked 30 or 40 others instead. You know, so they're clearly trying to put the pinch on things. So, you know, to the audience, I really appreciate any donations, et cetera, any support from all of you, you know, support. You know, Bill thinks he doesn't want support. Clint probably likes a little support. But thanks to Mark for the sheepdog hat, and thanks to George for the Trivium shirt. What's it say on there? Grammar, logic, rhetoric, truth, no bullshit.
Excellent.
So let's see. Anyway, I appreciate everybody's support. Tonight, 9th anniversary show, we're just going to have a nice casual conversation about, you know, heroes and legacies and what we're leaving for our children as far as natural law, and didn't really have an outline or plan. I know, put all of us in a room together and just see what happens. I didn't figure that we could possibly have any dead air, you know.
Hey, is that a compliment or an insult? What is that?
No, well, that was, I mean, I think the three of us usually come up with pretty good material, so we should be able to fill an hour or more pretty easily.
All right, because is there a such thing as, like, an insult that's a fallacy? Because that sounded like...
The fallacy of F.U.
No criticism intended.
So when you asked me earlier for a name of the show, the thing that came to mind for me was something that Clint was talking about, that the legal system is really about removing us from our source. So Clint, can you start there? Give us a foundation to launch from.
Well, we need to go back to your your foundation that you actually presupposed, which is... Does existence exist, right?
Yeah.
Now we always start there. And I remember that I tried to do the same thing you did when I was trying to talk to Mark Stevens, and because we could not get that maxim or that principle, that foundation, we couldn't have a debate. We couldn't discuss anything. And I think most people missed that fact, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is a sense of when you go back and you look at the sort of the roots of anarchism, or this organization that calls itself anarchism, which again, we're going by a name as opposed to an action, right? The real thing versus the group that says I am. just the same difference between someone who follows the law of God or the natural law and someone who calls themselves a Christian has nothing to do with each other, right? So you look in the etymology of nihilism comes from the anarchic period in what was it, France? And then you look at some of the my favorite guy, I don't really generally get into postmodernism, but because Simulacrum and Simulation is the movie that The Matrix was based on, I got into this guy, Jean Baudrillard, which is considered one of the top guys in that field. And he explains basically that the notion of nihilism has or anarchy from its inception to now has gone through several changes, mm-hmm. right? The first, when it was the revolutionary, the romanticism of it, which when it was an original idea, he says it corresponds to the destruction of the order of appearances. Surrealism, Dada, the absurd, and political nihilism are the second great manifestation, which corresponds to the destruction of the order of meaning. So at first, you had this, you know, what they portray in, say, you know, the fops and the fancy dress and all of that stuff, the destruction of all of that, right? All the fancy pomp and circumstance, the dress, right? All those ceremonial crap, all this wealth that just gets wasted on such things. Then political nihilism came along, corresponding to the destruction of the order of meaning, which is you've got the aesthetic form of nihilism, dandyism, and then the political, the second of the morphed political version, which we'd call the historical version. Which can also be called, if you will, a form of terrorism, which he says the two forms can no longer concern us except in part or not at all. The nihilism of transparency is no longer either aesthetic or political. It no longer borrows from either the extermination of appearances, nor from extinguishing the embers of meaning, nor from the last nuances of an apocalypse. It's gone from having some meaning, even a utopian meaning, to a bunch of people get together and sell pork and t-shirts and get tattoos and have no real purpose. But the notion of this political nihilism, this political anarchy, the destruction of meaning, the destruction of the meaning of words and how they apply, even the word anarchy in its original sense, when you're reading anything that uses that word, you have to understand that that means lawlessness. It has nothing to do, like, you know, with this group of people over here, or this, you know, what they call themselves as a name, a title, a flattering title means nothing to what the actual word is supposed to mean. And when it talks about no rulers, for instance, the citation for that, which they never mention, is the fact that there were no rulers in this certain period of time where tyrants came in and just absolutely just destroyed things and harmed people, right? That's what it meant by no rulers. But they take the word and they give it a new meaning so that you can no longer use the word. And once you take away the meaning of words, that is when you no longer can express the law. You can no longer express anything. And that is what has happened in the legal system. Because in the legal system, every word is opposite to the true meaning of the word. We say something, we're saying the opposite in the ears, if you will, of the judge who's listening. So we're speaking from a realistic standpoint, a literalist standpoint. They're listening from a metaphoric, fictional standpoint, because everything in legal is, of course, fiction, right? Now, what is the purpose, then, of legalism? It is anarchy, lawlessness against the natural law. What is fiction but lawlessness against reality? What is, you know, you could say that good is what is true and real, and evil is simply what is artificial, technology, etc. And it is when you start worshiping the image, the simulation, the idol, the technology, and you start worshiping the words and the terms over that which it represents, the art form becomes more important to you than the real. Mm-hmm. Well, then all of a sudden the real starts falling apart. The map looks beautiful, but that which it represents has taken a turn for the worse. And so the legal system actually draws us in. It does everything the Bible tells us not to do. And that was the point that shocked me when I first started looking into this, because every road seemed to lead to the Bible. Do not respect persons or flattering titles or bloodlines or, you know, fabled genealogies. Do not give oaths. Do not do all these things that we do on pretty much a daily basis. Do not be surety for another, which is what citizenship is. And you know, at that point, you understand all of a sudden that you have not a religion in your hand, but you have the law. And then I find the definition of Christianity in the legal dictionaries. It says, yeah, this is the common law. It always has been. It's just that this history has been kind of lost to us. It used to be illegal, unlawful to even speak any kind of negativity towards the Bible, because the Bible was law. Now, you can say anything you want about religion, because religion is completely detached from what the Bible is. And that's the important thing to understand, is that you have to forget everything you think you know. And you have to read this thing in a completely neutral capacity, looking up every term in its old languages, Hebrew, Chaldean, a mixture. So what is the purpose of the legal law? To defeat the natural law. What is the purpose of making us citizenships, vessels in their commercial system, to take us outside of the natural law, to put our hand on the Bible, which is the natural law according to government, not me, according to government, and swear an oath to the state, which means I'm blaspheming the Bible, saying I don't need what they call the natural rights or God-given rights. I don't need that. I'm a legal citizen. I only have legal rights. So you lose all, you literally lose your place in nature. You have accepted mammon, if you will, instead of God or Jehovah. And that's kind of the story, and that's why the birth certificate process was created, and we're all constantly being put into this system. And again, the title of the show is How Do We Stop That? And my opinion is that we start with our own property, our own children. And we say, I'm not going to expose you to this. Because everything that's done to the child up until the age of 18 or consent is, in fact, done by the parent. The child has, there's no contract that can apply to a child. The child has to accept everything that happened before when you reach the age of adulthood or legalized adultery. Right? Adultery is blasphemy to God, basically blasphemy to the reality, nature. So you're talking about this point in your life where you accept everything that's been done to you by your parents. You continue to sign in its name. You continue in all the contracts, all the bank accounts and everything else. See, that's the point of inception right there. Everything before that doesn't count unless you confirm and ratify it by continuing to act as that fiction. These are the tender years, these 18 or whatever, 15 or 16, depending on what country you're in. These are the tender years where we have to teach our children not to consent. When you reach the age of consent, do not consent. Do not act in this. Unless you choose. If you choose, after all you know, well, then I've failed, right? And, of course, that means we have to homeschool and teach the Bible. And, you know, it's a whole huge concept when you really think about it. So,
yeah, and it's interesting that you're quoting somebody out of the postmodern thing. Because what I find more and more in debates and more sort of the social shenanigans that go on, especially culturally, is inverting the relationship of something that exists in linguistics only versus what exists in reality.
Right.
So, you know, we can have an agreement with each other. That agreement exists in a linguistic frame, and it only becomes real until we act on that agreement. Well, it's only ever looking at the linguistic reality and then asserting that these linguistic frames are more real or form the substrate to reality. And it comes up everywhere. I don't know. I've probably had three debates today just on this one point, that they're, because they can imagine it within language, then they assert it as real and snip it off from its whole foundation, which is reality itself. You know?
Well, so I'd like to introduce to you the one thing that really, truly, initially got me to read the Bible and understand it for what it is. So imagine reading any book out there. I mean, so going back to existence exists, right? Mm-hmm. When you look at the word Jehovah, which is what they say is the supreme being, you know, all of those terms that people don't really understand. And it turns out that this word is a verb, mm-hmm. which is the most amazing thing when you think about it. Because remember, there's a Christian, which is a flattering title that does, you don't have to do anything. You're born a Christian. It's on your birth certificate. Or you are someone who's acting in law. So you're either the noun or the verb, the name, the empty name, or you're the verb, the action, the being, right? Mm-hmm. The supreme being. Wow, that means what is in being right now. When you go to the concordances and you actually look at the terms in there, I just pulled this up. Let me see if I still have it up here. Jehovah, i.e. the eternal, the immutable, that which does not change. In other words, nature itself, the universe, uni meaning one, verse, of course. That means monotheism, universe, monotheism. The name is derived from the idea of being or existence, right? Mm-hmm. So it used to be, in times much earlier, when you read the writings of even the people in America up until the late 1800s, instead of trying to scientifically explain existence exists, and there's that, you actually the definition of Jehovah or God, as we God being a sort of a worthless term, in the Bible they replaced the word Jehovah with God. But they also replaced every other word, king, magistrate, judge, you know, men also became gods. King, God, right? So you have all these gods, but only one of them refers to the supreme, quote unquote, being, the universe, nature itself, right? Which we are a part of. And so once I got that definition, and I knew to look up every time I saw the word God, I had to go look it up. Sometimes it was Archon. Sometimes it was Theos, godlike. Sometimes it was the Elohim, the plural. All of a sudden I had the definition of God, which I would have never even thought to ask somebody, hey, can you define God? You know, do you believe in God? Do you do this? Do you that? But can you actually define in the Bible what is the intent of the word expressed? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I start doing that to all the other words, and I find that I'm reading a completely different book than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
Right? And this unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because, you know, it takes a lot of time and effort to do this, is you have to decipher this thing after the Masonic secret societies and everything went in and messed it up and put it into such a metaphoric, you know, construct that most people can't get anything out of the metaphor. Because, you know, one of the maxims that has to come forward is that just because something is told in an unbelievable story doesn't mean that you can't get a truth from the story, right? Mm-hmm. And you find that throughout here. I mean, when Plato wrote about the five regimes or the men in the cave, those weren't real men. They weren't people supposed to be in history. neither is the Bible. Nothing in the Bible says it's a history, right? It's, everything is metaphor. Mm-hmm. And you go back and you start researching, you find that everything used to be written in verse or poetry. And metaphor, right? Allegory, all these different terms. Every culture has their allegory, their story of the, you know, whatever, the wolf that ate the moon, right? You're not supposed to believe that actually happened. You're supposed to get the moral story, and you're supposed to get the law that comes from the moral story. And so that is going back to the notion of existence.
And something you just said, Clint, it's a moral story. What's the moral of the story, right?
Yeah, I mean, nobody seems to have a problem with any other, you know, fairy tale or Robin Hood or King Arthur. It's like, yeah, bring it on, make a movie. Rah, rah. But when it comes to the Bible, oh, no, we can't. It's a fiction. Everything's a freaking fiction. Your history book is a fiction. Are you kidding me?
Isn't that because it comes with a certain authority?
That is our conditioning, and that's one thing we have to wake up to right away, is that we've been conditioned to stay away from this book.
I mean, the book itself has a certain authority. So historically, even, you know, citing the Bible would have real ramifications, like being burned to the stake or something. So that's the difference between, you know, the fairy tale here and then the book that is used to exert control and authority over others. Now, I'm not saying that that's the message.
Well, no, that's the classic, the notion of self-government, right, is, of course, to follow the law of nature, to have no property of another, because you can only be controlled by another if you accept their contract, their property. All right, that's right. Devil can't control you, as the allegory goes. Devil can't do shit to you unless you sign his contract. He can't get you any benefits and send you to hell unless you sign over your name, right? So the point I'm trying to make is that all of the explanations that you are putting forth, which are brilliant, they're also in the Bible, but they're told in a – you're telling them in a real scientific, real straightforward, literalist format, whereas the Bible tells it in story. Mm-hmm. Which is, of course, how Plato told it and how Socrates, and they all created the son of
Bill and I had this same conversation this week. It's, you know, it's all exactly in there and laid out, you know. But
And so my point is, God is, or Jehovah specifically, not any other God, is defined as what you were saying, which is self-existence or self-evidence. That means. And all you need to know, and see, this is why it was so much simpler back then to talk about these things, because you didn't have to worry about offending anybody or whatever. You could actually use the word God. People would know what you meant. Self-evidence and self-existence. What is all of nature? They understood the term in these types of even political debates. And so trying to define reality, trying to define, right? All you have to say is God, if you understand that that's the definition of it, of Jehovah in the Bible, right? So it saves you from having to constantly think of ways to say things that are reasonable, logical, right? It allows the spirituality of the subject to come in. And that's the real hard part for me. I used to get comments on my show. Why don't you just accept it? Why don't you just say the word, man? Say the word. Don't worry what people say. Say the word, right? Say Jesus. Say this. Well, no, because people think I'm Bible thumping or whatever. I don't want to, you know, we have to learn to not be afraid to speak these beautiful terms that have so much meaning. You look up the definition of Jesus Christ in the concordances. You know what it says? Quote, Jehovah is salvation. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ means Jehovah is salvation, i.e. the law of nature. Nature itself, law of nature, is salvation.
Right? You know, Clint, when I go through and read the Bible, to me what I see is Jesus, you know, going with what you're saying and referring to it as natural law, but it's Jesus is truth or natural law incarnate, and it's this, yeah, and, you know, and he, you know, and even Galatians 4:4 talks about, you know, God wanted to teach people natural law, but he had to birth natural law through a woman under the law. And in other words, through natural law, through the birth of a woman, so that there was a person to then teach natural law.
Which is the metaphor in the flesh. Yeah, it doesn't actually refer to the flesh.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's, you know, so what people get hung up on is it's irrelevant if the story of Jesus is real or not. What is important is the message of natural law that he's teaching. You know, so people have lost the message and chased after the creed.
And the message, to be clear, is to keep yourself unblemished. And what that means is no surname attached to your quote-unquote Christian name, which is the legal name for it. The Christian name is considered a God-given, that's why they call it the given name. And the last name or the surname is called an agnomen, an event name. Your birth certificate is the recording in history of an event, right? And so you, I'm losing my train of thought here. Sorry. I totally lost it. I'm sorry.
All right, so you're just going into how your birth certificate is this concept, you know, this thing that pulls you into this, I'm assuming the system, you know, because your first name is your God-given, quote-unquote, name.
The last name, literally the reason they say last, if you look up last as a legal term, it means your last will or your last testament. So by attaching the state's surname to the fictional name to the real name, the God-given name, right? As again, you have to learn to use these terms because then you can understand, okay, this is a name of nature. It's ambiguous. It cannot be connected to anything until I attach it to something that's property. Then all of a sudden, I can tell the name. I'm Clint Richardson. Oh, well, that limits all the Clints down to the Clint Richardsons. I'm Clint Richardson with Social Security. This. Oh, I've just been identified as a legal entity. The Bible is nothing more than stay away from all of that. Respect no persons. Take no surname. Take no other than, to be clear, the word surname is used, but it's you know, if God or Jesus gives you a surname, that's not the same as the state legally incorporating your name and enfranchising you into the government. And again, you know, this stuff is so huge. This subject is so massive. The only point I'm trying to make is you know, you have the book of nature and then you have the book of fiction, right? One is the law of nature and one is the law of fiction. And it is an eternal battle between the two. You could call one God and one the devil. You can call it whatever you want. Many science fiction movies have been made on the subject of those trying to remain pure or be the remainder and not be forced to evolve into something they're not. And then the transhuman or whatever it is over here. How many movies have been made of that, right? It's the subject of almost every science fiction movie.
And they even conflate the, you know, the birth of the new man as well into this amalgamation of, you know, transhumanistic nonsense when it was supposed to be, it was supposed to mean the birth of the new man through truth and righteousness and natural law. So they've subverted the whole thing into the birth of this ultimate transhumanist, you know, transgender slave.
Gotta ask, why is it that all the legal terms are the same? Why is, you know, you can look up the word saved in both realms. You can look up the word salvation, redemption. Why Christ the Redeemer? Why is he called that? Well, what is remedy in law? Money? Mammon? Right? You see, there's a parallel term. Sometimes it's not the same term, but there's a parallel and opposite in everything that is real in the legal version. And that's literally, when we say self-existent, does existence exist? Self-existence and self-evidence is what is quote-unquote of God, i.e. nature. including man, what is made of man, or an idea or concept of man, that is something that you need to keep over here and not ever make sacred or more powerful or more authoritative than the real that it represents. And that's really, if I were to go any farther with the Bible, I'd be doing it a disservice, because that's really all it's saying. It's just saying, hey, keep it real, man.
Yeah, it really seems like, you know, the show that Yana did, I can't remember the guy's name, that made the connection between magic and magi, and that really what we, you know, we're sold this
is that Disney, the guy from
neurobiologist or something, Carlos something, I can't
remember. Oh no, he's not a guy from Brazil though, right?
Yeah.
Jeez, wow. Yeah, I know which one you're talking about, but it's
a great video.
Yeah, and I hung out with him at the Free Your Mind conference.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
The connection between law and magic, and we're given this fairy tale impression that magic is this kid's thing.
The magistrate, the magi.
Yeah, but really what it is, it's our legal system. You know, and if you relook at history and myth from that sense, that the legal system is it all exists in language, and our adoption or consent to operate within that language is what has its effect on reality. So it can only be real through us, through our activities within it. That it's literally spellbinding. Legalese itself is literally spellbinding. You know, and
spell binding.
This is the caveat then that you have to add to your original maxim. Not just does existence exist, what is the difference between what exists in nature and what exists as a fictional construct, right? We have to agree that fiction also exists. Mm-hmm. As a fictional thing. If we can't do that, then we can't talk about it, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a matter of how does it exist, and
right.
It exists in our language, and then right. In our transfer there, of that. And
there's a
it can only exist through us. At the end of the day, it can only have an impact on reality through
here's
our.
Here's the beautiful thing. Christ. Jesus Christ, which is the personification of the natural law, the example to follow the natural law, can also only exist when we manifest it. There's no, it doesn't return as some being. It returns to men when they start following the law, just as men are following.
Well, that's the kingdom of God that's talked about all throughout the Bible, is when you wake up to natural law and start living in truth.
Right. You see, it's all metaphoric.
Okay, so how do we get out of it? Because here's the one thing that runs through my mind, that say we don't step into our legal person, we don't adopt the straw man. That doesn't prevent somebody from coming at us with cuffs on his belt and a Glock in his hand and putting.
No, and that's the great. I think that is one of the great fallacies of many of those movements that we're talking about, is that. The notion of a guarantee, the notion of some insurance that something's not going to happen. See, I think people miss the whole point of the meaning, the true and beautiful meaning of freedom. That's to have no insurance. That's to have no protection. That's to have nothing except what you would call a faith in God, which means faith in nature, which means faith in your fellow man, that he will help you out in a bind, right? Because we're all part of nature. We're all part of this concept of Jehovah. It's just that what man creates, right? He says, love thy enemy. What that really means is hate the fiction that causes, hate the badge, hate the persona and the flattering title that causes the fiction that causes him to believe he has power over you, but love the man. Because the man is the living substance of God. The fiction is, right? So again, you start to be able to say this word God, and because you understand what it means. Now that you have a definition, it doesn't sound so hokey anymore, does it?
Mm-hmm. No, and yeah, I got that from Jacob and Jan when we were talking. So I think it, I can't remember where it came up. Somebody was saying sovereignty was a state of mind. I think it was.
Well, so
yeah, it was. I think that was Mark.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm trying to dispel in people is the notion of sovereignty, is because only corporations have sovereignty. When you look up the Crown of England, for instance, or the Pope, you find that it's an office that belongs to the Holy See, and the Crown, the Queen, the King, belongs to the Crown Corporation. It even says on the website that it's a fallacy that the Queen owns a bunch of property. The Crown Corporation owns the property.
And she fills the office.
The mortal man or woman that fills the office doesn't own the property. The Crown does. Mm-hmm. Corporation, you see. And so we're worshiping corporations as governments, as gods, essentially. Because, mm-hmm. again, the word God just means magistrate, judge, president, king, queen. It can be any of those. God is a generic term. Mm-hmm. We choose our God by choosing our law. We choose mm-hmm. the law that's copyrighted by the king. Well, then obviously, you know. It's sovereignty, in other words, means that you rule over other people. All right? There is no sovereignty.
And not beholden to any other.
What's that?
And not beholden to any other.
Right. Well, see, that's the problem, because when you really break it down, you find that, okay, sovereignty requires that you're a ruler over other. That's why the states are sovereign. They are corporations. That's why the United States, in Congress assembled, is a sovereign entity over the United States, which is sovereign, the corporation, which is in Washington, D.C., which is sovereign over all of its property, which is what U.S. citizens are, right? So there's a definite hierarchy. States are quasi-sovereign. The federal government is completely sovereign over anything federal, anything in the United States. And so, again, what does that mean? Each one of those entities is ruling over something or someone else. To have sovereignty, you must be a rule over someone else. So no man...
The end of it, the only way that that country can claim rulership is that monopoly on force. So now we're going from the legal definition of sovereignty. Now, how is it operating in reality? In reality, under that legalese, or by use of that legalese, they maintain a monopoly on force. That force is what creates the domain, the dominion within which you are free if your behavior is within the dominion of the law, and so on.
Which is why the word free means franchise.
Yeah. Because it's freedom within the dominion. It's
the rat is the domain, free. Right?
The dominion, the kingdom, the king's dominion, the kingdom.
Yeah, and liberty is something granted from a sovereign. Liberty is the benefit of sovereignty extended to somebody else in the agreement for your behavior to be ruled. Because exactly. I was just working on an article that...
No man is sovereign. There's only some idol, some corporate structure, some crown. Mm-hmm. When does the man become a sovereign? When he puts on the fish hat, right? Fish hat for the Pope, or the crown, or he becomes president, or you're in Congress, right? Those are the only times. You're wearing something artificial. Sovereignty, then, is an artificial. And why I say that, why it's so important, is because what the Bible and what most of the law books will tell you is that you're supposed to have God as your sovereign.
Right. Which is natural law.
Yeah, we are all under the authority of nature. There is no
but and that and God being law. Natural law and truth. And so, you know, and logos, we shouldn't confuse that.
The government recognizes that as the highest law, and that is the key to everything.
So with that, if they recognize that as the highest law, and they recognize it as Jehovah, which is then nature, how can we use that within their system to our benefit?
You can't. You can't be in their system and also without it, right? You can't be in the matrix, plugged into it, and also be without it.
So how are you without it if they hold
the Bible says leave
woof.
What's
leave
that?
Babylon.
Woof.
How do you leave Babylon?
Well, you know, it's surprisingly easy. If you're willing to do certain things, it's more difficult if you want to, depending on your goals. It's right in U.S. code how to leave the United States. You can expatriate, or you can go to any country, any other country, or you can do it in the United States, which is, you know, you have to contact. It says right in U.S. code. I don't have the code in front of me, but I can find it for you. You know, write this to the Secretary of the State, I believe, and do this, and that's it. If you go to another country, it's much more simple. All you got to do is go to a consulate, an embassy, U.S. embassy, ask for a certain paper, fill it out, and you've just rescinded your citizenship.
Okay, but does that mean that you're no longer under the law?
You're no under law, yeah. Well,
so you are never under the law. Your person is. Your citizen is. You are acting as the insurance policy, the puppet master of the puppet, right? So you, as surety, and the Bible says if you're surety for another, you will smart, which means be put in pain. You know, you'll be put in pain for it. You are in agency. So the United States is your principal, your employer, your trustor, whatever words you want to use. Best word is principal. You're the agent. And anybody you deal with in person is a third party because they're all foreign. All states are foreign to the United States, a corporation, the holding company that the citizenships are in, which, again, is Washington, D.C. Now, remember, Washington, D.C. is a municipal corporation. The seat of government was put in it, which means the United States. Congress created the United States, so it's sovereign over the United States. The United States then creates, you know, they basically created Congress, recreated Congress as members of the their ethics committee, and member means employees, so they're employed. Whereas in Congress assembled, when they meet on behalf of the states, they're not employed. That's the legitimate government that you keep talking about. But they created a corporation for the, it's like a slave corporation, right? Voluntary slavery. And that's the trick is, see, you say they have a monopoly on force. That is true. They have a monopoly on force for their own property, which is any person, place, or thing in the legal system that they have named and registered, etc. They don't have that right to you unless you say, I am your property. I am Clay Richardson.
With this, what prevents them from rounding you up even if you've rescinded your citizenship?
Well, there's no guarantee. Again, what is freedom?
No, I'm not asking about guarantee. I'm saying what is the prevention of physical force to round you up?
Your own Glock?
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
There is none. Whether you're a citizen or whether you're not a citizen, there is none. You see, you're mistaking citizenship as having some protection when it doesn't.
No, that's not what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is that all of these legal fictions ground through that monopoly on force. It's what allows them to act in reality.
But you have to understand, despite all of this talk about volunteerism and wanting to live in a voluntary society, you're volunteering to be a citizen.
I understand that. What I'm saying is, if the people that I hear talking about being an individual sovereign, which is, it's not possible for an individual to be a sovereign, the only way to get out from under that is to establish your own monopoly on force against those legal institutions.
And that would be, of course, to follow the law of God. Why I say the law of nature. Why I say that is because at that point you've gone from positive law to negative law. And this is an important concept that unfortunately most people have not been given. It's so wonderful because, you know, what do you do with electricity? Okay. The power of nature is in the negative. You ground the negative and you take the positive, right? So you're creating a positive, controlled, forced flow of energy, whereas the rest of it is going into the ground, back into nature where it came from, right? So positive law is what man creates. Negative law is what is the law of nature. Now, what does that mean? Because we're taught that negative is bad and positive is good, right? Because that's the literalist term. But in legalism, in the higher language, or the king's language, as they call it, the negative law refers to that which is, again, self-evident, i.e., it means that I have the natural right, the self-evident right, not to be forced to do anything. Okay, that's why they call it a natural right, because it refers to the concept of negative. There is no established, written, strict law. Whereas over here you have positive law, which is the Roman or strict law. Okay, that says you have the right to be forced to do all these things, which, you know, go to any U.S. code, and you'll see that, hey, these are saying it's my right, but it's saying my right to be put in pain. It's my right to be put in pain, punished, taxed, licensed, and extorted from. Mm-hmm. See, over here in nature, that's not my right. But see, in the positive law, they force rights upon their own property.
So the trick is to find a negative law that forms a commons and isn't, you know.
You always, as a man, remember, all men are created equal. That is a maxim of law. That doesn't mean that I have the same physical agility as you. It doesn't mean that I'm as smarter or whatever it is. It doesn't mean that. Okay, equality is not something that's in the Bible. Okay, the Bible's real. It tells the truth. No man is equal to another. But we're all born equal, which means we're all born innocent of any status that would say I'm better than you. Mm-hmm. Any fiction, right? Any title. That's what it means to be born equal. All men are thus born into nature innocent, equal, without blemish, without legal titles. Over here in the legal realm, we're not talking about men. All persons have the equal right under the law to be punished. Mm-hmm. That's a big difference. Mm-hmm. And over here, I have the negative right not to be touched, harmed, trespassed, etc. Over here, I have the right to be eminent domain.
And then, they do this by creating the person.
Right.
And then they can do harm to the person,
right,
because it's a fiction. But then you agree to represent the person.
Right.
Okay.
You cannot harm
the negative right. And what guarantees that negative right, or ensures that negative right?
Your God. Right, okay, now, so as a citizen of the United States, my God is literally the people, the United States.
Yeah.
I have chosen my law. Mm-hmm. I have chosen my status because I have chosen that as my day-to-day functionality. My law, that's the law I'm following. I'm following a law that is anti-nature. It's
okay, so if I choose to live under God's law, natural law, what ensures that?
Well, again, you got to understand, going back to what that means. That means have no titles, flattering titles. And that means rich, poor, doctor, lawyer.
Yeah, the issue is that we're not living in such a system now to see it.
That's what I'm getting at, is that this isn't a matter of us just pulling out of a system. This is a
this is a lifestyle change.
Destroying a system. It's already in place.
It is leaving Babylon, essentially. It is saying, okay, I don't want to be a part of that. I want to get out of the matrix, if you will. The only real, you know, what happens when I leave the matrix? I go back to reality. Right? I'm not looking for the rabbit hole. I've been in the freaking rabbit hole my whole life. I should be looking up for the exit instead of looking down for the rabbit hole.
Yeah, because what I'm getting at is that the only way that you could actually live in reality without falling under these legalese is to gain a territory, hold that territory, be able to defend that territory.
What used to be, and this is where it gets tough, is that it used to be that you could start a religious society, a sanctuary, a monastery, right? The law is very specific. It says you lose all your civil rights, you lose your inclusion, your personhood, right? You're no longer a citizen if you do one of two things. You become you join a monastery or religious society where you're following the law of God, or you're a criminal, a convict, and you have all your civil rights taken away from you. Mm-hmm. Those are the two ways that you are essentially banished from society. I'm going to pull something up here that'll maybe make this a little bit clearer, because it's, you got to understand the, again, the metaphor that we live. We live in a fictional character. You might pull this up real quick. Where are you? The Huffington Post reported on October 10th of 2013. Now, this was a fascinating story, and it happens more than you think. Findlay, Ohio, an Ohio man is finding out there's no easy way to come back from the dead. Remember, talking about personhood. Persons, when a person dies, that means a contract is executed. The contract is ended. Doesn't mean that there's any physical death. Just like in the Bible, Jesus didn't hang on the cross like the church wants you to think. He posted a public notice with the nail. And it even says that in one of the verses, which cracks me up. Donald Miller Jr. went to court this week to ask a county judge to reverse a 1994 ruling that declared him legally, in other words, fictionally dead, after he had disappeared from his home 8 years earlier. But the judge turned down his request, citing a 3-year time limit for changing a death ruling. All right, so what happened? He left. He had child support and all this stuff. He was so overwhelmed that he went to another state, and he didn't use any aspect of his persona, right? So after, there's a statute of limitations that said if you're not active in your little corporate status, your commercial status, you're declared legally. Your person is declared, your status is declared as quote-unquote dead. The contract is nullified. You no longer have a status in the United States. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is another way that you can lose your status if you want to wait. I don't know what the statute of limitations is. Depends where you live, probably. So he comes back to the judge and says, hey, judge, I'm still alive. I'm standing right in front of you. And the judge is like, I'm sorry, man. Your person is dead. I can't give you back. I can't give you back your life. What he's saying is I can't bring you back into the matrix because we've already declared the plugs to be invalid, right? You need an upgrade.
You're free, guy. Go. You're not free, in the system.
And here's a guy on his knees begging to be put back into the system. Right? Please put me back into the matrix. Give me an identity. Please, I need an identity. He can't do anything. He can't get a driver's license. He wants his Social Security. And you know what the reason why the wife came out and said, hey, no, you can't do this. You can't give him his personality back, his legal personality back, because I've been collecting his Social Security. He's dead. I declared him dead. If he's alive, then I have to pay back all that Social Security. Okay, so this is how you know and how you verify that your identity, your person, your all this crap that we call the straw man is not you. It can be declared dead and can be detached from you. Mm-hmm. This is one way, disappear and have someone declare you dead, or, you know, find out what the statute of limitations, I think it's 7 years maybe. Or, again, go to U.S. Code and it'll tell you how to leave the United States. Now, what you do from that point on, I cannot tell you. I cannot tell you what to do. I say, look, read the Bible. It'll tell you what to do. What it'll tell you is not to go back to that quote-unquote life. Mm-hmm. Remember that life is defined as the time or term of a contract. That's life. It's legal life. It doesn't exist. Just like Bugs Bunny. Why does Bugs Bunny have life in the cartoon? Right? It's not real life, but all these words, they confuse and confound us because we're literally thinking. We're not remembering to always think metaphorically or figuratively because we're talking about the legal realm. And if we're in, you know, what does it say? When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Well, when in the United States and you're a United States citizen, you better well do what United States citizens do, or you're going to find yourself in a lot of trouble. But when you're ready to leave that fictional system.
Or Canadian in Bill's case.
Then you're in God's realm, and you better do what God commands. Again, metaphorically, it's just, I never spoke like this in my life till I understood the definition of God, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not religion, it's law.
Yeah, how do you know? And that's really the biggest issue is, you know, you see people's faces get, you know, like this glaze-eyed look when you bring up the Bible and try to explain that it's not religion, that the whole thing is just natural law, you know? And it's like, look, all of this stuff, this character Jesus, he's just a hero. And like you pointed out the other day, Clint, which was brilliant, was that Jesus is the hero that you can be. He lives in truth. He lives in natural law. And all he's doing is like, look, live in truth, live in law, be consistent with reality. You know, a contradiction is a lie or an error. Always spot that stuff. Carry your sword. Be a sheepdog, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's getting out of that literal state of this deity being and understanding, you know, truth or natural law incarnate is Jesus, and God is this, is essentially truth or logos or the word itself. And then, you know, all of a sudden when you go through and you read the Bible this way, there are no contradictions in the story. None. The whole thing makes sense.
No, and I told you this a long time ago, and I think you didn't believe me until recently.
I had to sit down for 30, 40 hours and read the thing for the first time in years.
The trivium is in the Bible, but
it's... Oh, wow, the whole Bible is the trivium. That's the funny part, too. The whole Bible is the trivium, is natural law. Grammar, logic, rhetoric, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, mind, body, spirit. It's the same thing over and over and over. It's repeated ad infinitum through the whole thing.
Remember, you know, especially the New Testament. Very important thing, and that is that logic is interconnected with the word dialectic. Right, so the Hegelian dialectic. Logic is not necessarily a good thing. If your grammar is bad, then your logic obviously is going to be bad. Your rhetoric is going to be horrible.
Right, so the truth is that all of this legalese is resting on that one thing. It's just just its own form of logic. And this is what gets me about rationalists and idealists is their argument only exists in language. It exists nowhere else. You know, so you gotta have more. You gotta humble your ideas before nature.
Yeah, you know, it's really weird because, you know, and I would have never even thought of saying this 6 months ago or a year ago, even though Clint kept beating it into my head. And I did pull out my Bible and set it down like 6 months or a year ago because of Clint, and I was going to read it and I didn't. And then I got it out again, and I finally, you know, I've gotten through 300 or 400 pages recently, and it's like, okay, and just looking at it all in terms of natural law, truth incarnate. You know, the whole thing makes so much sense, you know, and it's like, you know, yes, there is this, and it's even discussed in there that, you know, you have to be in truth to understand the Bible. You have to be on the right-hand path. You have to understand that a contradiction is a lie or an error to understand the Bible, essentially.
Well, you also have to understand that there is a dualism with all these, again, you know, societies, theosophy. Theosophy, for instance, when you look up the actual word, it means God, knowledge of God, right? So it's pretty arrogant to think that you might.
Well, and then they spin it all,
God, right? So they're actually taking these beautiful concepts, twisting them in a way that only they can understand because they have the codex or the deciphering tools to understand it, right? So, again, it's very important to have the dictionaries, the concordances, Webster's 1828 right next to you when you're reading the Bible so that you can know what these terms actually mean so that you can, again, decipher what those who mistranslated, purposely mistranslated it in the first place. But what you cannot change or what hasn't, what you cannot hide is, again, these concordancies, these lexicons that have been created to explain what the Bible's, you know, what the words actually mean, going back to all the different languages. You keep, no matter what English version you read, you're going to be able to go back and see that every version says the same thing in the old language, because, you know, it's not a word. It's pointed towards the verse. The verse itself, no matter how you translate that sentence, it can be a completely different sentence, but the words that are used are going to go point right back to a specific word used in the Greek or the Latin or the Hebrew or the Chaldean or the whatever. So you cannot, like, people ask me which Bible should I read. I tell them the King James, because the King James version is specifically the 1611 is it's copyrighted under the crown. So it's the common law of England. The common law of England was transferred over to the states of the Union, but the United States doesn't have common law. People don't realize this. They're constantly trying to utilize common law, which includes the Bible. So if you think the Bible is the foundation of common law from the Bible, then you have all the man-made and court cases and everything else. So if you're not following the Bible law, then you're going to get sucked up into man's law. And eventually, through ignorance and conditioning, your parents will be thrust into the notion that they need to register your birth and throw you into the system like everyone else. You got to understand, you don't have constitutional rights. You know, you don't have... As a positive right, the Constitution is called a negative document. In other words, it tells you what government cannot do to a private person or a citizen of the state. But a United States citizen, you have no constitutional rights. They're going to tell you do. They're going to mention it. They're going to keep the illusion and the delusion. But I got court cases that are very clear that citizens of the United States don't have. They're not. The Constitution wasn't made for us. We were created after the Constitution, right? 14th Amendment citizenship, quote unquote, was created way after the Constitution as part of the United States, not part of the legitimate government. So again, our God is the United States, i.e. the people. The people is a plural. No man is the people. Again, a trick of words. I am the people. Wait, the people sue me. The people freaking sue me in a court case. How can I be the people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually, you know, we can get recognized as living beings under Canadian law, which a lot of people don't know. You have to literally invoke the charter rights by asking for administration of justice. If you ask the judge that you're seeking administration of justice, these are their words, it evokes the Human Rights Charter.
So, this is what's so interesting, because, you know, I used to be one of these people that are just against government, right? Just government's evil, period. Then I realized the whole system of, as you pointed out, sovereignty is actually set up as an honor system, right? But in order to be honorable, you have to act honorably. Mm-hmm. So you can't be a citizen of the United States acting in complete fraud and expect honor. But you can act honorably and expect honor. And I think that is what's missing from most people's comprehension, is that government, whether they like it or not, they do have to respect certain things. It's not only just their law, the common law, but it's also the international law, the law of nations, the law of, like you said, humanitarian type of thing. So the human rights, you know, which, and I'm not a big fan of the United Nations.
Because prior to them bringing the Human Rights Charter, United Nations is a fraud. You had all rights. Until they brought under common law, you have all rights until your right bumps into somebody else's right. So, again, no.
And that's where the negative law comes in. You do not have the right to interfere, and he does not have the right. Remember, that's negative, and then anything that's the opposite of that. Oh, well, I'm a higher status than you. Let me step on your face. That's positive. That's a creation of man. Creation of God, creation of man. Creation, all you have to think of that word is that it means real, natural, something self-existent that had nothing to do with man an act of God, as they define it in insurance policies, right? An earthquake, as opposed to an act of the state. Creation of man, are you a creation of God or a creation of the state? In other words, how are you acting? What law are you following? Well, again, what law you follow defines what God you follow. And that is basically how it works. Now, again, I'm not sitting here telling you that there is some course that I can tell you to follow, except Jesus is the example, right? Speak directly to someone. Don't respect their name. Speak parabolically, which means, well, you asked me my opinion or advice. Well, I'm not going to give you that, but I will say that a wise man would follow this path, whereas a fool might do this. You can't sue me for slander. I didn't use your name. I acknowledged no titles. I spoke in parable. That's what Jesus did in public. In public, you must not offend, right? You must not tread.
Because there might be some liberal hiding around the corner waiting to pass a law somewhere, you know?
Right. If you don't have a person, then you can't be summoned to court. That's the other, I mean, right? You can't summon a demon. They can't summon you unless you are a daemon, I should say. Unless you are the agent for service of process with a federal address to be summoned to court. They can't summon you they summon their status, their person, their property, and you, because you're surety for it, have no idea you were made that as a child and you continue to do it, right? Ignorance is okay. Make no mistake. The maxim of law is very clear. It says that to know the law and to be under the law are the same thing. Hmm. Okay, so if you're stupid enough to be under the U.S. code, which is bigger than my house, then your ignorance of it, that's your fault, right? That's what it's saying. If you're dumb enough to be under a law that you don't know, or that you can't imagine or can't comprehend, well, then you deserve what you get. That's essentially how their maxims work. Mm-hmm. Right? So ignorance is no excuse. That's ignorance of fact is an excuse, but ignorance of law, no excuse. Same thing with you standing in front of God, metaphorically. He's going to say, hey, I realize that you think that you were a police officer when you killed that poor pregnant woman with your taser, but that was actually you that did it, not a police officer. That was you. You're responsible for all your actions. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas in the legal realm, you create a fictional character so that you're not responsible. And you can go to church and they'll bless you. And, you know, the church always protects the state and the state always protects the church. They go hand in hand. They're one and the same. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, man, the title of the show, I think, is apt. And I really do believe, you know, I think about myself, use myself as an example. Am I brave enough to step out into all of that, just that beautiful, wonderful, untouched land out there, and have a leap of faith or a walk of faith and actually go, like they do in Australia, for instance, right? And just say, hey, I'm going to count on the good grace of God to get me through, which to me, that means men, too, because men are creations of God. Their fictions are not. So that means I'm counting on everything in nature to get me through. And most people that I know, when taken out of their element, taken out of the public sphere and all the pressures and everything, and when they're alone, they're much different people. They're charitable. They'll bend over backwards. I'll bend over backwards for anybody. You know, it's the societal pressures that stop them from doing that. It's, oh, well, I don't have a license to be a charity, so I can't help you. Hmm. What? See, think about that. I don't have a license to be a charity, therefore I can't feed the hungry. Mm-hmm. You know, the charity alone defeats 90% of the legal system. Because if charity doesn't involve money, charity is pure giving out of love, there'd be no court system if we were all charitable to one another. If we followed the law of nature, which says, do not What does it say? No man should be wealthy until all others have wealth, or make ensure that all men are wealthy before thyself. That's charity. That's the opposite of property and hoarding and all this
stuff. Yeah, and it says always do it in good faith too, and, you know, not from a place of trying to get gain, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is the law. So, I mean, my best answer to you when you ask, you know, how do I not get a boot in my face, or, you know, I can't answer that. But
the question comes down to this, ironically, which I hate to put it this way, but that's what the Bible was written for in the first place, so that you don't get the boot in your face. And hopefully enough people would read it and get that it was natural law eventually, that the natural law aspect, not the dogma, not the religion, but the natural law aspect and truth were recognized so that nobody had to deal with this crap anymore.
Yeah, they say, for instance, that if a slave could first learn how to read and then accepted Christ as his savior, therefore God as his sovereign, that he could no longer
be a slave.
Now, well, I have not
explained that to me, though, that because I think
there was. I've not been able to verify that.
Say that again?
I've not been able to verify that.
Well, you know, and it's a state of the mind, too, I think, because when you're living in truth, you know.
That's my issue right there. That's my issue right there, is because that's a great way of pacifying people, to say that I'm free in my mind. So even though you have control over my body or the threat of death.
Well, here's the thing is, it's in Corinthians or somewhere toward the back. There's a section in there, you know, and it says, if you are a servant, treat your master this way, but masters, you must treat your servants the same way. You know, you have to respect them and you know, not put them down, not do all of these things. So, you know, it's like if you're an indentured servant, there were rules on both sides. It was never one way. It was like, look, yeah, you're indentured.
So it's an alternate legal system is what you're saying.
Well, let me read this. So this is referring to states that, and by the way, the Bible is not multiculturalism. The Bible does not say get along. The Bible does not, when it says turn the other cheek, that was actually a reference to you can hit your slave on the left cheek, but you can't strike him on the right. So turn your cheek so that they strike you on the right so you can fight back. Okay, so that was the law of the time, the Mosaic law. So you got to understand that there are, when we're talking about the United States, there's two citizenships. So they do call the people of the United States as sovereigns only because that's the nature of the legal language. It doesn't have the true meaning of sovereign. So let me read this to you. As regards, this is Theodore Roosevelt in a speech. He said, as regards the first set of dangers, it behooves us to remember that men can never escape being governed. All right, keep that in your head at all times. You can never escape being governed. Okay, this is what you're talking about. How do I get out of the violence? How do I get out of the, right? He's going to tell you, okay, you will be governed. Either they must govern themselves, which is what we're talking about, natural law, or they must submit to being governed by others. Now, I would go so far as to say that's probably a self-evident truth, because men will always organize for themselves to improve their lives and enslave others, you know, to make their lives easier. That's almost qualifies as a self-evident truth, almost, right? Either you will govern yourself, you will by the law, or you will submit to being governed by others because you have no military force, and theirs is stronger. If from lawlessness, i.e. anarchy, or fickleness from folly or self-indulgence, they refuse to govern themselves, then most assuredly, in the end, they will have to be governed from the outside. They can prevent the need of government from without only by showing that they possess the power of government from within. A quote-unquote sovereign cannot make excuses for his failures. A sovereign must accept the responsibility for the exercise of the power that inheres in him. and where, as it is true in our republic, that's not the United States, the people are sovereign, the people are sovereign, then the people must show a sober understanding and a sane and steadfast purpose if they are to preserve that orderly liberty upon which, as a foundation, every republic must rest. Okay, by every republic, it's referring to the 50 states. All right? So you can become one of the people. You can go to that status, but to me... and therefore, you can become a landholder in the private areas of the state, which are not held by the United States, the public lands, right? So you can become what's called part of the sovereignty, which is quote unquote the people, which means the state. That means you're a citizen of the state, a private citizen. No state citizen is a U.S. citizen. That's the important part.
Oh,
you see. No U.S. citizen is a state citizen. Again, your principal is United States, Washington, D.C., a foreign corporation, offshore. You have the you have yourself, which is acting as the agent for its vessel, its person, its straw man. And you have the state that you, quote-unquote, reside in. And that is a third party that you're acting in agency to. So... the state that you live in is foreign to the United States. Therefore, you're a foreigner in whatever state you reside. Your domicile is the United States, but your residence is in that state. Just like if someone comes from Japan, they go through the United States, get a visa, and they reside in the state for a while, as long as they have permission. Well, same with you. The difference is that your permission is permanent.
So that's the difference between the 14th Amendment citizenship it's essentially citizenship to the federal government.
They originally created 14th Amendment citizenship for Negroes. Okay, the word Negro does not mean black; it means tainted blood. There's only white persons, which are certain persons of status of pure blood, blood from the kings of England, essentially. So Barack Obama, I always use that as an example because he's a white person by his blood. Mm-hmm. He has AB negative blood, which is one of the rarest bloods in existence, right? So you have a bloodline, the posterity that created the United States. The reason they created 14th Amendment citizen was to give slaves the opportunity to have the protections you're talking about, right? So I'm a slave. I'm newly free. Basically, to be accurate, the United States took over slavery. Okay, they made it voluntary. Okay, the 13th Amendment says no involuntary servitude or involuntary slavery can happen unless, of course, there's always an exception, unless you're convicted of a crime. Okay, well. Guess what? U.S. citizenship is technically an open-air prison. You're a felon. Okay, it's an internship. You create the 14th Amendment citizen for Negroes. Suddenly, if I go and try to harm a Negro, quote unquote, as the law defines it, then all of a sudden I'm hurting United States property. I'm hurting the person of the United States. I'm hurting the future potential labor or capital potential of that person by shanking him or hanging him from a tree, and therefore I'm guilty of a federal crime. But what they did was they left it open. They said, well, this is a status purely for Negroes, but anybody else can contract with the District of Columbia, right, where the seat of government is. So that's where the birth certificate process started coming in.
Which is the contract.
So all of a sudden we're all filtering into the United States, you know. That's the real story. It really is a slave. It's a pirate cove. It's a slave colony, but it's voluntary servitude is what it's called. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and that's why we're not party to the Constitution. We're a creation of it, right? So the Constitution says government can't do anything to those who've reserved their rights, but we get all our rights from government. We don't reserve our God-given rights, our natural negative rights. We are United States citizen in the positive realm. Therefore, we get positive rights forced upon us. We don't have natural rights. Because, hey, all persons aren't created equal. It's a sick and twisted history that people just, you know, it took forever to figure it out, of course. But
none of this stuff is ever easy. It took us all years to get where we are.
Yeah. Well, but I think the best thing for humanity is for that system to fall.
Well, and this is where I say I'm not interested anymore in – I don't want to mess with their system, you know. I'm not going to blame them for being exactly what they were taught to be in their family. They've got a system. They're making an offer. I am contracting with it. Okay.
You know,
stop contracting.
What's interesting, Bill, and to a point that Clint made years ago on the show, is Title 18, Section 242. You know, and you know, the law itself is mostly, in a sense, honorable. But it's, you know, everybody is acting under the color of law and doing all of this stuff outside of law and then pointing at government and saying government is the problem, you know, and it's all of, you know, and if one of the points I wanted to make earlier is if government is, you know, as the Bible says, and I don't remember where, if government is in, or maybe it was you that was talking about this the other day, Bill, if government is in direct reflection of natural law, then everything is consistent, but it gets away from that, you know, and it, you know, so, you know, the trick is how do we live our lives with all of these people living this, you know, man's law under this persona,
yeah,
and be able to stay free ourselves. Yeah. And that was your point earlier. It's like, get a bigger Glock, you know?
Yeah. The point that is that the law itself, the idea of law, being made real through a monopoly on force. But then we use that monopoly on force for management of the commons. Now, that includes human behavior, right?
Using the word monopoly, though, who does the monopoly board have power over?
Well, I'm saying over a territory.
The monopoly would be the militia.
If there's anything within this, we can kill if we like, and anybody that wants to come over the border, we can kill if they try. So I'm just very...
That's not true, because the Amish, for instance, cross the border of Canada and the United States constantly and are left alone because they already know. There's no use in trying to...
I'm saying a military force coming in to take over your country. I'm talking about establishing a monopoly on force over a territory. That is what gives the weight of law. This is how laws are enforced. Somebody coming through your door with cuffs and a gun. That's the reality of it. Regardless of how
law is enforced, yes.
Well, whichever country or whatever history you want to go to, or even how far back you want to go, what makes these laws have an effect on reality is there are people that are executing force to enforce them.
Well, and even natural law, if somebody wrongs you under natural law, you're going to, if the person is still acting that way, you're going to retaliate and reinforce your natural law.
That seems like a perfectly reasonable, almost like an excuse, right? It's like, well, what? I'm going to go. Well, I have to be part of the nation or the country.
That's not what I'm saying at all. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that the only way that a nation can exist, the only way that these legal fictions can exist, is by holding a monopoly on force.
Well, right, but
if
then
they don't hold a monopoly on force, then they need to have agreements with other sovereigns that will provide that force for them. So this is the only way that these legal systems persist. It's not just a matter of agreement. At the end of the day, if everybody disagreed to follow the law or
it comes down
to guns and bullets.
You have to understand that there's a whole other system, which is private state citizenship, which has United States has no power over its quote unquote sovereign people. Who created it, right? So there's a whole other system out there. United States law is municipal law. It applies only to municipal persons, right? People that are...
At the end of the day, any law that's going to have any force over anybody is physical force. whether when you're saying that it doesn't apply to their sovereign citizens, what you're saying is that they're agreeing not to use force in that particular case.
Right, but what I'm trying to tell you is that you can say that all you want. The second that you allow that reality to affect your destiny, affect your steps that you take, well, then you've just created an excuse not to follow the law.
Well, I don't understand how you made that connection, because I'm not talking about something that I would do.
Well, what's your point? My point is
that what makes these things have an effect in reality is force, and that force is executed through people.
Okay, but what I'm trying to tell you is that there's a system of honor. For instance, William Penn, he said, men must be governed by God or they will be ruled by tyrants.
Yeah, and as long
And God being natural law and truth. And that is the core issue right there. I mean, basically what we're trying to get at is, how do we wake up people to natural law and honor again? Because everybody's out of honor, even. I mean, this is why people used to have duels and all of this stuff. You violated my honor, you slandered me, etc. That was the point of all of that. But, you know, we have to figure out how to get people back into natural law. And it's like saying, how do we get people to read the Bible again and understand that the Bible is natural law and not religion?
It boils down to this notion of the fear of God. Which means not what most people think. Instead, what you're talking about with the fear of military boots on the ground or whatever, see, that replaces, again, that's the legal system conditioning us to be afraid of this concept of martial law or whatever they show us in Hollywood and wars and everything. So you're replacing the fear of men with the fear of God, or the fear of government with the fear of God. Fear of God simply means fear of what will happen if I don't follow God's law, natural law.
That's right? Not at all what I'm replacing. What I'm saying is that the only way that these systems have any impact in reality, the only way that they exist in reality that have any power, is the force behind them.
Sure.
As soon as a government loses a monopoly on force, they become illegitimate. They lose control. They lose that ability. So all of this ability rests in a monopoly on force. So what I was talking to Jan about is that we use this monopoly on force, or they use this monopoly on force for trivial tasks like commons management. And as soon as people understand that, there is no legitimacy to write laws anymore. That disappears.
Right.
There's no reason to use that monopoly on force to decide where a budget's going to go, or where a road's going to get built. But that's how they're using it.
This is where the notion of blood sports, blood, public executions, all the different school shootings, the constant threat of war, like in the movie 1984, right? None of it's actually real in the respect that they're selling it. But as long, and this is in the Iron Mountain Report, actually, if you read that, as long as you can sell that there are terrorists constantly trying to get us, that they're constantly on the verge of war, and show in a public capacity blood, like games theory, like blood, public executions, these kind of things, like we're just constantly being bombarded with, that is actually, it's not the force itself, it's the ability to justify the force that they have. So any government to sustain itself in history, it is said that they had to trick the people into supporting its military apparatus, because, of course, as you say, without the military, without the police force, you have nothing. Your word means nothing without something to back it up.
And Clint, this goes all the way back to, when was that, when we were trying to help Paul Schrader get elected sheriff, you know, and understanding that when the sheriff is the supreme law of the land and is married to the people and calls forth the militia and the posse, and that should be the sole, you know, the sole place of the quote-unquote monopoly of violence, because that rests with each of us, the people, and not the standing army that is then removed from the sheriff and the people. You know, so it's, how do we get the militia back and get away from the standing army and all of this stuff?
And what you're describing now is self-rule.
Yeah. And, you know, it's getting, but that's, you know, at the same time, it's getting back to the sheriff and all of these things that we started with, you know.
Here's the bad news, though. Okay. And, you know, the Bible is not a book of hope. The Bible tells it like it is. You know, you want to cause something to actually happen, get rid of the hope. What does the Bible say? That there'll be a remnant, a remainder, right? And that number might be 144,000. I don't know. However that works, right? I'm not trying to change government. I'm not trying to change society. I'm not trying to change the matrix or its programming. I'm trying to pull a few people I can out of it so that I can actually have like-minded people to perhaps get some land and live under the law we choose to live under, whether that means building a monastery, moving to somewhere that respects sanctuary type of situations, or becoming a state citizen, getting private land and being the king of that land, if you will. Whatever the course I take, my goal is not to change their system. It's not mine. It's not yours. They created it for themselves and their posterity.
And the idea is to get out, you know, to leave it and not try to, you know, operate within it and try to correct a system that was never made to be corrected.
If I am peaceful, I'm not in competition. I'm not trying to create some money system that's competitive. I'm not trying to create a state or a country. I just am living under a law that basically makes it impossible for them to summon me as a peaceful, you know, law. This is all respected by them, and that's what I'm trying to say. And there is no guarantee. They can come in any time, and they can shoot you up, you know, just like they did in Vietnam or any other of the 55 countries we've invaded for no reason. Mm. Or, well, there's opium. That's a reason. You know, there is no guarantees. So I'm telling you right now, my friend, there is no gun to your head.
I know that.
This is a voluntary system.
No, I'm fully aware of that. And, but I, what I'm getting at is that the guarantee comes through that force again. That, their laws are guaranteed.
And that's never going to change.
I'm not saying it should. What I'm saying is it's a necessary component, and actually a necessary component for any group of people to work together in large scale. So you have to have rules to follow. You have to have a way to ensure those rules. Those aren't my issues with it. My issues is this legal fiction stuff. It's this linguistic reality that we're beholden to.
It's how to – it gets back to honor. Sheepdogs. Yeah, that's it. I mean, what else can we do?
Yeah, and any hope of making that like an actual system like that, I don't think really exists unless systems fall.
Yeah, well, and it somehow we end up back to hordes and martial law, you know, or martial, militia.
So that was my notion of maintaining the values on autonomy and on honor and things like that.
Well, this is why the meanings of these words, the meanings of the words in the Bible and the meanings of the words in the legal system are so damn important. David Slauson, he said, names are an important key to what a society values. Remember, a name is empty. The name and the reality the name is on are not the same thing. Anthropologists recognize naming as one of the chief methods for imposing order on perception. So we are ruled by words. This is why I focus so much on language and terms and actually getting to the bottom, not of the meaning of, there is no true meaning, but when you're dealing with a specific entity like the United States, you don't get to define terms. Mm-hmm. You don't have an opinion. It's their opinion. That's why they call it the judge's opinion. They define the terms. And if you're stupid enough to say, well, no, that's not what anarchy means. I believe it means this. Or I don't believe that means, no, it means this. Well, you're going to lose every time. You have to always learn from their perspective of you. You don't ever say, well, I'm gonna make my own language. No, it's their terms. They're copyrighted. They're laws. They made them. You don't get to change it. That's why I say trying to change the system is trying to reprogram the matrix when you're not on the outside of it to do it is impossible. We have to leave. And all that means is leaving the name. What is a name? A person, place, and thing. A jurisdiction. I'm going to render back to Caesar. What is Caesar's? My persona, my status in Caesar's realm. I'm going to get out of his jurisdictions. That doesn't mean I can't walk anywhere because it's, you know, technically public areas. I can go anywhere I want. I don't tread on private property, but if there might be an easement that says I can't go anywhere unless I cross your property, right? These are common law aspects that'll never go away, right? So again, the perception is all based on the name, right? So name means person, place, or thing, jurisdiction, government, property, this, that, that, another. And that's how we're conditioned. So, like I said, I'm not going to try to change the system. I gave that up a long time ago. That's Alex Jones bullshit. You're not going to change anything. Mm-hmm. You need to leave. That's what the Bible, that's what the law says. You cannot live next to people who are not like-minded. The Bible doesn't say be multicultural and accept every other religion, because religion is, you know, its basis is a book of law.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, and it's either you accept natural law or you're out. That's it, you know. And people, you know, get confused in it because it's been converted into a religion. But when you understand that the whole thing is based on natural law and truth, it's, look, you either live under natural law and truth or you're out. That's it.
Mm-hmm. But where?
Well, that's just it. So the reason that and this is a beautiful concept.
And that's the monastery thing we get.
Well,
back to.
The metaphor of the remainder, right? There will be a remainder or a remnant. Think about the word remainder, okay? What is the remainder of a remainder? Remainder is what is left. Remainder is what never left in the first place. Mm-hmm. Remainder is what hasn't been added, subtracted, divided, and conquered. Right? What is the remainder that the Bible refers to? Those who never leave or go back to or reborn into nature. That's the remainder. You're remaining as part of what you always were. You never left. You just have been made to believe that you're in this fictional system. That is the concept of the remainder. There is no remainder to a remainder. Remainder is a finality. It is what is left over when everything else has been contaminated.
So it's the Bedouin boy in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, it's a beautiful concept when you think about it. You say, where do I go? Where do I go? I'm like, well, you know, God is nature. Nature is God. There's all kinds of places. I'm personally looking at, I'm thinking about Russia myself. I'm thinking about all kinds of different places because I don't like what I see happening in America, you know? So.
Yeah, Russia's going up and we're going to be like the Soviet Union was, 80 years ago, mass murdering 60, 70 million people.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't say that I have experience. I'm only trying to teach what the law, the Bible tells me is the path I should be taking. I'm always honest. I've not walked that path. I intend to when I feel absolutely, you know,
confident
in the fact that I've maybe gotten to the point where I can do it with confidence and not be thrown in jail, you know. This is Mayor Baba, which, you know, take it for what it is, but I love this quote because it really explains myself as well as everybody else out there. It says, "The deeper secrets of spiritual life are unraveled to those who take risks and who make bold experiments with it. They are not meant for the idler." And I'll admit, that's me, who seeks guarantees at every step. Right? The deeper secrets of spiritual life are not meant for the idler who seeks guarantees at every step. Those who speculate from the shore about the ocean shall know only its surface. But those who would know the depths of the ocean must be willing to plunge into it. I say that that is the perfect example of what I'm supposed to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing according to the Bible. Take the plunge. Leave.
And when Clint says the Bible, he's referring to natural law, not the religion, just to be clear to folks who are confused on that.
Yeah. Confusing. So, you know, I maybe I have an overconfidence, maybe I have a faith even, I don't know. But the more I read, the more all of this makes sense, and the more it helps me to understand the entirety of the legal system, which is opposed to this, but at the same time, it respects it as the higher system. So, yeah, that's no protections, no guarantees. So,
get your sword, your Glock. That's your guarantee right there on your hip, man.
Or get a dog. You hear her over here?
Yeah, and the dog. This isn't an either or thing. This is an also and situation.
Yeah.
You got to be, you know, the sheepdog, woof. So
yeah.
If you would like to go to the, yeah, let's see if it's here actually, the U.S. code.
And let's wrap it up after this. I think we're
just so you can see how actually easy it is. I mean, it's written right out there for you. You want to quit your citizenship to the United States? Currently, Title 8 of the U.S. Code fills in the gaps left by the Constitution. It says Section 1401 defines the following as people who are citizens of the United States. And then it goes and gives you... where is it? I'm on the website usconstitution.net, and it's constitutional topics, citizenship. I thought it had a link. I'll have to get a link to you or something, but it's right in the U.S. code that you can relinquish it, and it tells you how. Sorry.
I know it's right. So, you know, other than studying what Bill and maybe Kurt Doolittle and what all of us are trying to get across, with the caveat that Kurt was most probably former CIA, you know, the only other, and this is the second time I've actually said this in the last couple of weeks, which are Gnostic Media Firsts, the only other way to really learn about natural law is to study the Bible, especially the New Testament, and understand that God is natural law and truth, and Jesus is truth incarnate going around teaching it. And if you can grasp those simple concepts, the fictitiousness, the religious aspects, the deity worship, the contradictions, all the problems in the story all fall out and disappear. And it's just, you know, to me, it's a really, well, I shouldn't say simple. It's a pretty decent owner's manual that all Gentiles got a copy of. You know, and that's really it. You know, it tells you who the adversaries are, how they trick you, how to stay in natural law. There's no guarantees in there for how you do it. You know, I mean, they killed the hero of the story for him trying to get into natural law, right? I mean, you know, so it's
exactly.
It's that's just the way it is. I mean, it's the temple, and then there's the natural world outside. And if you want to go walk out in the desert, you know, the hounds of hell may come after you to try and drag you back in.
Just to be clear, the ways to lose citizenship are detailed in 8 U.S. Code 1481. So Title 8, Section 1481, becoming a naturalized in another country, swearing an oath of allegiance to another country, serving in the armed forces of a nation at war with the U.S., working for the government of another nation, that you swear an oath of allegiance, formally renouncing citizenship at a U.S. consular office, formally renouncing citizenship to the U.S. Attorney General, and by being convicted of committing treason. Those are the ways to lose your citizenship in Title 8, 1481. You can look that up yourself.
Commit, there you go. Just commit treason.
Sure. Then you'll see the boot.
Easy. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for all your support and donations. Bill, thanks so much for this. This is really good stuff. No doubt this is going to help a lot of people. We're really bridging these different directions, you know, to the hub of the wheel that we've been coming from. I think, you know, it's beginning to get more clear. You know, I think some of the audience is getting over their ingrained fear of looking at the Bible as natural law. It took me a long time hearing Clint talk about it. It's like, all right,
just think of it this way.
I better go read that dang thing again, you know.
You've got to think of it this way, man. The spiritual... The authority, if you will, of the spiritual realm is always higher than the civil or man-made realm, right? So nature is always higher than obviously fiction. Truth can only exist in reality, et cetera, et cetera. So what you're really doing, what we're having a problem doing, what I had a problem doing, was connecting the spiritual and the secular, if you will, to realize that they are intertwined in a way.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, you can't know one without the other.
Knowing truth is, it reconciles everything because,
right. You can't know anything unless you know its opposite is basically what it boils down to. And so you have to merge these two realms, if you will, in order to truly understand anything. And that's again, I'm losing my pride, I'm losing my whatever it is, I'm losing my ego, I guess. Whatever it is that's stopping me from being a completely spiritual man and actually saying, okay, no more, I'm out of here, and walking the walk instead of just talking about it, whatever that is slowly being melted away from me. And that's what has to happen. You have to become, and you have to see everything what it is, right? You have to see the beauty of nature, not the price of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said. Bill, any last words?
not that I can think of, no.
We'll have to do this again where you talk and I shut up. Yeah. Sure. We said that at the beginning. I'm like, I can't help it, man.
Well, you know, yeah, let's definitely schedule something again sometime too. I mean, it was a great show. The audience was loving it the whole show. People are really, you know, I mean, this is about as deep into anything as there is to go deep on. So, I don't know. Anyway, I guess that's a wrap. Clint, anything else? Bill, BillJocelyn.com. Clint, what's your websites again?
You can get the book free, always free, at strawmanstory.info. And just my blog. I'm going to put a blog up, by the way, that I really recommend you guys read about time. realityblogger.wordpress.com. That's one of the things I forgot I wanted to talk to you about, but we'll do it another time.
No worries. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for supporting the show. Please go to the Gnostic Media website up at the top. Donate if you like what you heard, if you appreciate what we're trying to do. Talk to you all soon. Good to talk to you guys. Have a good night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Happy anniversary!
Thanks. Yeah, that's the ninth year show. Take care.
Excellent.